Greetings and salutations, friends, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are your video game podcast, the video game podcast, the world's video game podcast of choice, of du jour, of the month, and of the 15 minutes of fame that we so rightly deserve. I am going on record now as saying we deserve our 15 minutes of fame. How we get there has yet to be determined. I'm putting my money on sex tape, but that's just for now. That's just an idea I'm putting out there. We can workshop it later. But it's just an idea on the whiteboard now. Because I am Mike the Legend, here with you for the glorious day, recording on Wednesday, January 23rd of the year 2013. Ladies and gentlemen, it is, in fact, the future. And I say that because, for us, it really is the future. This is our first business as usual program of the year of 2013.
Indeed. I'd like to say, nice touch on starting it off with a very ambitious goal of sex tape.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice. It's good to have goals. It wasn't one of my stated New Year's resolutions for the year, but it was one, you know, the one I kept in the back of my mind. Didn't feel comfortable verbalizing at the time, but I'm going with it now. It's out there, and I'm accountable for it now.
Yes. And as long as you're accountable for it, that's all that really matters. But this week, I am Dennis, the man who wishes to inform you that the Gaylord National has the best fire alarm system ever.
Well, that is a rather obtuse nickname. I dare say that's a borderline statement.
Yes, well, it might be a statement. Should we level with the people and say that we haven't technically recorded a show yet this year?
I think it's time to come clean.
Okay. This is technically our first show that we're recording in 2013, since, well, we decided to kind of pre-record things, and because we had a lot on the go during the holiday season, as I'm sure most of you do, but we didn't want it to appear as though we were leaving gaps, so...
True. That's probably why some of you out there were wondering and thinking to yourselves, it's kind of strange that in the middle of January, they're still doing a year in review of 2012. Generally, those sorts of things take place at the end of December, you know, maybe first week of January at the most. Well, we kind of, we had some things going on, and we needed to fill the time, as you said, fill in the gaps, and that's just worked out best. And also, too, a lot of people will it's not uncommon for people to and shows to pre-record, and then they'll take a break around the Christmas season.
That's true.
A few weeks in and around there. We were still working and recording around Christmas.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. But back to the whole point.
Yes.
Since we haven't recorded yet in 2013, MAGFest actually did happen. We went to MAGFest, and now we're back, and we haven't actually talked about MAGFest yet.
We haven't. It did take place 3 weeks ago, as you might have heard. Our MAGFest music show at the start of the month was for the week of January 4th. We recorded that in advance, of course, because, well, we were actually at MAGFest when that was happening, and we wanted to enjoy ourselves and not have to worry about bringing down the necessary equipment to do the recording of a show while down there and all that other stuff. And
indeed,
it was at the Gaylord National in National Harbor, Maryland, which is just a stone's throw from Washington, really.
Yeah.
Over a bridge and an interstate and a giant clover leaf of concrete that is obscenely large.
Yes, but my nickname is in reference to something that happened at MAGFest, which, if you're part of any of the online communities of people who did end up going to, you know, to MAGFest as a meetup, you know, one of the ones I've, you know, what forums that I post on, this was talked about quite a bit, and as it should have been, because it was ridiculous, but there was a fire alarm that happened at about 6:30 in the morning on one of the days during MAGFest.
On Friday morning, I believe it was.
Yes, and it was pretty much the least fire alarm-sounding fire alarm I've ever experienced in my life. And, you know, this is someone who remembers elementary school, who remembers, you know, all the fire drills that we had to go through, and the super loud, like, cover your ears because the bell is super loud, and that means get out of here, come on, get out. If the school's actually on fire, we're all dead. So, you know, that I remember that. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things that I distinctly do remember. And Yeah, it was...
And I think from that experience, too, and everyone has the experience of fire drills in school, that probably we have a certain sense of how a fire alarm should sound. It should be a loud bell that is just blistering and trying to destroy your ears to draw attention to the fact that there's an emergency happening. And also, yes, if you hear this sound, get the hell out.
Yes, and it's pretty much a universal sound. Well, what happened at the Gaylord National is what... It sounded... It was loud enough to sort of wake me up, but not loud enough to make me realize that it was a fire alarm, because it almost sounded like the red alert sound from Star Trek The Next Generation, interspersed with a voice saying, "Fire alarm, please clear your room," or something along those lines. But because it happened at like 6 in the morning, and I was pretty much, well, asleep.
You were dead asleep.
I was dead asleep, and then this got me up. But for some reason, in the dark, Mike the Legend can attest to this, because we were sharing a room at MAGFest, and I guess he saw me get up, run across the room, and start fiddling with the thermostat, which for some reason, my asleep brain thought was an intercom, and I thought that someone was trolling us in the room. I thought this was just someone going, "Hey, wake up," blah, 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 and I'm trying to turn it off, going, "I just want to sleep." And then it took me probably a good solid, like, 2 minutes to wake up and realize, oh, this is a fire alarm happening. And then our reaction was the same, pretty much as it turned out, throughout the entire convention's reaction of, well, I don't want to get up. I'm pretty sure 10,000 people would have died if there was a fire in the Gaylord National that day.
Well, I didn't get up initially. I heard the alarm, but I just kind of brushed it off because I thought for some reason maybe someone had set the time, and it was just simply the clock radio, the alarm on the clock radio going off, and I was trying to ignore it. I wanted sleep.
Yes.
And then I heard you rustling, for the thermostat was on my side of the room, and I just kind of wondered, what in the sweet hell are you doing? And then I clued in, oh, that's the fire alarm. Okay, well, let's figure out what's going on here.
So we started talking, and we were thinking, okay, well, do we get up? And then pretty much as we were both coherent enough to realize what was going on, it stopped. For a good solid minute. And we thought, oh, okay, I guess it's over. Then, no word of a lie, it started up again. But for some reason, the voice that was talking wasn't saying fire alarm anymore. It was just saying, the fire alarm has been canceled. There is no longer anything wrong. And I swear this alarm went on for longer than the fire alarm actually went on for. It was the same level of, like, emergency kind of siren sound that it was playing, but it, just to inform us that there's nothing wrong.
The calming message, the all-clear message, to restate, started off with the exact same sound, the exact same emergency sound, the same alarm sound.
The winding up Next Generation Red Alert sound. Yeah.
That kind of alarm sound, the thing that jars you awake, draws your attention, and calls to you the fact that something's happening, be alert, be awake, you could be in peril. That same sound starts the all-clear message.
Yes.
A more counterintuitive system. I cannot imagine. Alarm, alarm, never mind, all clear. Alarm, alarm, all clear.
So it was pretty much just a huge, angering thing that just kind of happened. And of course, you know, me personally, it takes me a while to get to sleep. So, as you can tell, once I was finally asleep, to be woken up super early by this thing.
Jarred awake. Like violently jarred.
Only to, you know, just try to start to get back to sleep, only to have a second alarm happen. I thought it was a bit ridiculous and unnecessary.
I didn't feel bad, though, initially, when trying to determine what course of action we should take. Should we put on pants and GTFO? Should we, just wait it out? Do we stuff towels under the door to try and save ourselves? What do we do? Looking out our window didn't help, because it looked into a courtyard which simply was surrounded by the other sides of the hotel.
Yes.
So that did us no good to assess if there was danger on that side. Looking out into the hallway served no purpose, because there was nobody in the hallway. save for just two people who left their room, I guess, heeding the warning set forth by the alarm itself. We lucked out, kids, and we're fine this time, but don't use us as shining examples. If you do hear a fire alarm, evacuate the building.
Yes.
We accepted the risk this time and made a calculated risk that we'd be fine. We took that chance. And, well, came up aces this time, but who knows, maybe next time it comes up snake eyes. Hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully not, but, you know.
And hopefully this hasn't jaded us for future fire alarm incidents.
I have a strange feeling that it has, unfortunately. But hey, a person needs their sleep. I mean, come on. Come on, fire. You gotta, like, you know, happen, you know, during work hours.
Exactly.
Really, like...
We had a long day of travel, in fairness. I mean,
yeah.
We had to catch two planes, had a stopover in Toronto, like, and had to go through all the customs BS, and it was just a big hassle, and our plane was delayed. And, you know, the normal rigmarole of travel. We had that. And you just want to sleep that night. You don't want any interruption.
Exactly.
Cursed Gaylord National Fire Alarm System. Curse you all. But that was that. I mean, we could go on and on with the various tales and stories and shout-outs to the people we met down at MAGFest, but that would seem more timely if this was, say, the week after MAGFest and after we had just gotten back. But if you want to know more, if you want to hear our tales, and if you want any pro tips, travel tips for if you're looking down at going to MAGFest yourself in future years, certainly shoot us an email, info@thearcadeshow.com.
And please, like, if you prod us enough, we might talk about it on, you know, a show in the coming weeks.
Indeed.
A little bit more.
We're now seasoned travelers to MAGFest.
We've got a couple under our belts.
We've done this gambit before, so we can advise, we can caution, we can tell you what's good, what's not, what to look out for, what to avoid, and what to be aware of. So there is that, and we have some knowledge. Feel free to pick our brains, people. Again, info@thearcadeshow.com. But as this is our first business as usual program for the year of 2013, we should really just get right down to business as usual. And I feel the best place to start would be with the ludicrous leadoffs.
Yes, the couple news stories that are just a little bit more ridiculous than the rest, which is, you know, standard fare at this point. You should know what we do. We've been on for 7 years now, so...
Going on 7 years. In February, it's 7 years, which is a number I wish not to think about. It's a big number. It's getting up there. It's getting close to 10.
But yes, this first ludicrous leadoff takes us back to the Kyusu initiative, as brought to us by the good folks at LEGO.
Indeed.
If you're not familiar with the Kyusu initiative, we talked about it a little bit last year.
Yeah, it was almost a year ago when the big push was on for LEGO Minecraft sets to come to fruition. And there was a big online campaign to make it happen. A designer submitted ideas for what they thought it could look like. And
yeah.
LEGO evaluated its legitimacy, its validity. They also evaluated whether or not they could actually get the rights to make this happen, and if enough people wanted it. And sure enough, the people spoke, and the world now has LEGO Minecraft sets.
But yes, basically, I guess the idea behind this Kyusu initiative is that anything, as long as it gets enough votes and enough community support, could become LEGO, provided that, you know, the designer's arguments and concept art or what have you is compelling enough.
Mm-hmm. And it meets certain criteria. Again, you have to be able to actually get the license, and if it's a license that works well with LEGO, and if there's, you know, just enough support that LEGO feels that to make this thing a go, then they'll take it into consideration and go from there. But so that hasn't stopped people from submitting many, many ideas for other franchises, other properties to get the LEGO treatment, and not often do they get approved for one reason or another.
Yes, but it seems like it usually comes down to a battle of three of them that eventually, you know, get bandied about and mulled over by the top people, or, well, not the top people, but, you know, some people that, you know, at LEGO proper, who just kind of look at it and go, let's figure this out. And this year, or I guess the most recent round of them, there was three of them, And I guess we'll mention the two that lost out first, because they would have also been kind of cool, because they were video game based again.
This is true.
Like Minecraft. And honestly, I would have preferred to, in a way, part of me would have preferred to see one of them, namely the Legend of Zelda Lego set, because someone had made concept for Legend of Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
Someone also made concept for EVE Online, so that would have been kind of cool too. But the one that won, it's kind of surprising they haven't done this before, or if they have, it wouldn't have been for a good long, long time. but it won, and it's coming back, and that is Back to the Future Lego.
Yes, that is a thing, people.
Back to the Future Lego set.
Huh. Yes, believe it or not, that is the plan. It was put forward and submitted by Masahi Togami. I hope I pronounced the name correctly. Apologies if I didn't. And he was the creator of it. And the plan and his idea is calling for three sets of Lego Back to the Future set, or Back to the Future Lego. One will be based on the DeLorean, as it appears in each of the three films. One of the other sets will, or the DeLorean, sorry, will also come with Marty and Doc Brown minifigures as well. And now, how much of these sets and how much of everything we get still remains to be seen, but that is at least one idea for a set that's been put forward. I imagine one of the other sets would be of the Hill Valley Town Square from the first one, where they just kind of, it all comes around with the big, I guess, clock on the face of the building and having to run the cable and catch the lightning back in the 50s.
Oh, there's tons of possibilities from you know, the Back to the Future movies for Lego sets. Even, like, you know, just, like, something to do with the hoverboard. Something to
yes.
do with the diner that was the pivotal scene in, you know, the first one. Something to do with, well, I don't know, like, the alternate 1984 or 1985 or...
Yes, or Biff's Casino.
Biff's Casino, like, you know, all sorts of different things. There's any number of things that could have happened with that, but yeah. Back to the Future. Though I want to say it might have been a little bit rigged, the competition this time, because the guy that designed the Back to the Future Lego set, Masashi Togami... he actually works for Kuso.
Okay.
So, it's very, very, a little bit sketchy there. But having said that, Lego is doing the admirable thing with this one and saying that the proceeds made from the, I guess it's not so much Lego as it is Masashi, because I guess the creators of these sets get a cut of,
The revenue.
The revenue. And he said that he's going to be donating his profits made from this whole initiative to Parkinson's research, yes. The Michael J. Fox Foundation.
Indeed, very noble and worthwhile cause.
Yes, so can't really fault the guy there.
No, it works. There's nobility to this, so okay. There's a charitable aspect. We'll go with it.
And I mean, it's still cool. Back to the Future Lego.
Exactly. Even if this, you know, was rigged and there was some sort of, I guess, maybe wink-wink, nudge-nudge going on at the, you know, with the QSO people, I'm okay with it, and call me somewhat hypocritical, but I just think the idea of Back to the Future Lego is entirely awesome.
Yes. I mean, I don't recall there being Back to the Future Lego from back in the day. Of course, that was a long time ago.
And well, there wasn't really. It's only been, say, in the past 10 years that Lego has gone the route of other properties, of doing Lego sets based on other films, TV shows, just other entertainment franchises.
Well, I remember Star Wars Lego was one of the first ones that sort of started to kind of come
was.
Around.
It was, I think, one of the very first other intellectual properties that Lego started doing sets for that weren't their own things. Wasn't the Lego Ninja set or Lego Medieval Castle set or
the, blah, the Lego blah, blah. The Lego Spaceship set, which I had, I remember back in the day.
Exactly. I mean, the Lego almost always exclusively, up until a couple years ago, again, did their own in-house sets and their own stuff, and now probably what they've seen is the money is in doing Lego sets of other properties.
Yes.
Which, fair enough. And then, I guess, that's where it's really handy having QSO be a thing on the internet. You have the people. You to go submit ideas, and also it's a means of getting people jazzed and excited, and also taking the pulse of the internet to see what people actually want and what they'd be willing to dole out the shekels for. And apparently Back to the Future Lego is something we'll get to dole out the shekels for. A DeLorean set, people.
That would be awesome. Just putting that out there. That'd be totally awesome.
Now, we know the DeLorean, by and large, stayed the same throughout all three movies. However, there were some differences from between movies 1, 2, and 3.
Yes. And in the case of 3, I believe there were a couple of significant differences, especially near the very end of the movie.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Not to mention the train from the third one.
Ooh.
That could also be a Lego set.
Oh, well, I like that idea. Well, that'd be awesome.
Or, you know, Lego's Easy Top. Just, who are uncredited in the film, by the way.
That they are.
But
I like the train idea.
Yes.
I like that. That could be one of those, I could envision that easily being one of the huge, like, 2,000-piece sets.
Oh, yeah, easily. One of the crazy ones that Trey Parker would more than likely buy to work on while writing South Park.
Of course. He needed a distraction.
Yeah.
So I like this. The idea was, again, given the green light back in December. So the story's kind of old, but nevertheless, still worth talking about all the same. And once we get further details about just what all the sets will include, how many there will be, when they'll be released, and what kind of price point we're all looking at, we will certainly bring you the information here on the arcade, because we're just into the awesome stuff, folks.
Yes.
So we move along to our second ludicrous leadoff of the year, really, a brand new one of the year, and it is also from 2012. It is a story that came out the day before the announcement of LEGO Back to the Future sets, and it is from the world of, I guess,
well, medical science going kind of...
Yeah, not really crazy, more just, unfortunate.
Yes. Now, like, I'd like to preface this that, you know, this isn't a political statement or, you know, some sort of religious thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, neither one of us are kind of saying, no, you shouldn't use, you shouldn't look into stem cell research because it's bad. I don't think either one of us feel that way.
No, and this is not the platform to make any sort of announcements like that.
Yes, or, you know, nothing for or against, but... This is just more or less like a buyer beware tale, that just kind of be aware that when you start messing with certain things, it might not happen in the... Like, it might not work out the way you want it to work out.
Yes, and just always make sure, and this is more for the listeners down in America, just if you're undergoing any sort of procedure, you might want to double-check and triple-check and quadruple-check your attending physicians' references.
Yes, or, you know, if they give you any sort of, like, warnings, like, hey, there is a chance that you might grow an extra finger or something from this, that you might want to consider maybe exploring something. Like, if that's a very big deal-breaker to you, maybe you should consider exploring other avenues of treatment.
Yeah, make sure, as best you can, double-check the person's credentials, that they know what they're doing, and that you're clear on what the ramifications could be. Because one woman in Los Angeles who underwent a non-FDA-approved cosmetic eye surgery, which involved stem cells, had some very unfortunate side effects happen.
Yes. Now, these aren't, you know, the controversial stem cells. These were stem cells from a fully grown adult from the abdominal fat.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, grown stem cells in the lab, whatever.
Nothing really controversial about these ones.
Nothing controversial, but, you know, stem cells still are like, you know, that the miracle grow of science, it seems, where, you know, anything is possible with them, and, you know, provided that they're the procedure's tested and everything's done under the right conditions and all of the proper precautions are taken and everything.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those cases where that didn't really happen.
No, and unfortunately, she just went in, or she just wanted a procedure to look younger, take care of some wrinkles, and just really clear up the, I guess, the crow's feet in and around her eyes.
Yes.
So she had some of these stem cells injected in the area around her eye, hoping that they'll just provide a more youthful appearance and, again, take care of the crow's feet, which for some women, they can't stand. Cool, whatever works for you. Unfortunately, in this non-FDA-approved procedure, the side effects didn't really include...
They did include, as a matter of fact.
Well, they didn't really include clearing up the crow's feet. What they did include, however, was growing some extra bones in the area around her eye.
Yes, and other interesting things, you know, like pain, a clicking sound in her eyelid that quote-unquote sounds like a tiny castanet snapping shut... But most importantly, yes, spontaneous bone growth in the surrounding flesh. Can you imagine having bony eyelids? No, you can't, because that's insane.
Yeah, that's kind of gross. When I first read this story, as I found it written by Ashley Feinberg of Gizmodo, the image I had in my mind's eye the whole time was that of Doomsday from the DC Comics, the character who killed Superman. How he just has bone protrusions all over his fingers, his knuckles, his eyebrows, and what have you. So that is the image I had going in my head constantly while reading this thing. That's not a pretty picture.
No.
I don't want my medical procedures to make me look like that.
No. Comic book bad guy is not something that you want to look like.
Now, granted, I mean, that's the absolute extreme end of, I guess, if she let this go for years and years and years unchecked, that's what she might have ended up looking like. She didn't get to that point. She just, I guess, had tiny bones growing underneath the skin that were causing great pain, and again, causing her eye to snap shut and make a clicking noise and cause her pain anytime she wanted to close her eye. So, yes, the problem was that the stem cells used were mesenchymal stem cells. Now, they were taken from the abdominal area. They were taken from her abdominal fat. But these stem cells in particular have the ability to turn into cartilage, fat, or bone.
Yes.
There's the problem.
Yes, but it all depends on, like, the conditions under which they're prepared and different things that, you know, lead up to the procedure and, you know, different catalysts use. Because the surgery also used calcium hydroxyapatite as a filler, and, well, calcium mixed with these stem cells, I guess, must have acted as some sort of catalyst to start causing bone growth.
Yee.
So, untested surgery, no FDA approval, yeah, this is... For as many times as you hear people say that, oh, the FDA and, oh, the government's trying to just keep all these awesome things away from you and...
Yes, keep these awesome procedures down. They're simply working at the behest of, you know, big pharma, the big drug
yes.
companies, and simply want to keep prices high and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure that a certain degree of that is true. There's also the times when there is something that really is dangerous that you should probably... look a little bit into first, like this.
Yeah. I understand. This was probably a procedure done under the table, maybe paid for in cash. The guy made, you know, the physician, or I don't want to say physician, but the guy doing the procedure, who I want to envision as being some slimy guy with a really slicked back pompadour hairdo.
Or like Dr. Nick from The Simpsons.
Ooh, good one. Yes. Coming over to her house and doing it, like, right in the living room kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm envisioning. Don't do that, people.
No.
I know it should probably go without saying, but don't do that. We can report and are pleased to report that the woman who underwent this procedure and who had bone growth going on in and around her eye has since had the offending bones removed, and she is doing much better.
But there is one word of caution from Paul Knopfler, who's a cell biologist at the University of California. He just kind of cautions, stem cells aren't your typical drugs. You can stop taking a pill and the chemicals go away, but if you get stem cells, most likely you'll have some of those cells or their effects for the rest of your life. And we simply don't know everything they're going to do. So even though the bones are all removed from her eyes and she's doing well now, That's not to say she won't one day maybe have a mystery appendage to start growing again. So that's the word of caution here. So just be careful.
Buyer beware, folks. Buyer beware. Yes, these, living room procedures, probably not the best.
Yes.
Just throwing that out there. But we'll move along to a story that is more recent. It is from this month of January, just about 2 weeks ago it came out. But it relates to a story that you heard us talk about on last week's episode of The Arcade when we were doing part two of the 2012 Year in Review. You probably heard us talk about and mentioned the lawsuit that mystifies us still to this day that was launched by Sony. Well, technically, they launched two suits. One against Bridgestone for using, or for the belief being that they used the Jerry, for the Kevin Butler character.
As portrayed by Jerry Lambert.
Yes, in their some of their tire commercials, because those commercials featured Jerry Lambert, the actor who plays Kevin Butler in the Sony PlayStation 3 PSP commercials. And, of course, he was also sued by Sony, because why not? When you have the lawsuit shotgun loaded up, might as well just keep firing. It's not enough you sued Bridgestone, which they're a big company. They have lots of lawyers, millions of dollars and billions of dollars going on. They can handle a lawsuit like this. Jerry Lambert, on the other hand, is just an actor.
Yes.
He's getting by from job to job, best as I can tell.
Yes. Now, you know, granted, he's a recognizable face now because of his Kevin Butler character.
He is.
Still, he's a commercial actor. He's not even, like, really in sitcoms or anything. Like, he's not, like, a movie name or movie star actor. Like, he's no Brad Pitt or George Clooney or someone.
Certainly not. No, that name notoriety just isn't there yet.
No.
And who knows? Maybe it will be. Maybe it won't be. But for the time being, he is the Kevin Butler character, and he's done upwards of 30 PlayStation TV ads over the past 3 years. So it's going to go a long way into getting his face out there as being the face of Sony. And that was the crux of the lawsuit that Sony filed against, everyone that they filed a lawsuit against over this matter, is that he's our face.
Yes.
He's in our commercials. Bah.
But at the time when it came out, we made no bones about the fact that we thought it was unfair of them to go after him personally, since the commercial, he wasn't Kevin Butler in the commercial.
No.
He was just, you know, some generic scientist guy. Like, but the contentious issue is that they had, like, a Nintendo Wii kind of driving game set up there, you know, with one of those generic kind of families playing a game and, you know, scientists pointing at a computer screen kind of thing.
Yeah, that was the crux of it, and apparently there are some other commercials he was in, part of this campaign, I believe, where he was, in fact, seen playing on a Nintendo Wii game console, and part of the promotion was that Bridgestone was giving away a Wii system as part of a contest to people who bought a set of tires. So that was that. Best as we can determine, was a commercial that aired only in America on select stations like TNT, FX, and ESPN, which makes sense because the promotion was, best as we can tell, only open to residents of the 48 states.
Yes.
We are not those.
No.
Certainly not. So,
yes.
That's that. But the commercials we saw, he wasn't really doing anything. He wasn't saying, I'm Kevin Butler. He wasn't doing anything of that sort. It was just him and his face in the commercial, and that's what bothered us so much. But we are pleased to report that the lawsuit between Sony and Mr. Jerry Lambert, a.k.a. Kevin Butler, has in fact been resolved.
Yes, though unfortunately, it does seem like he got a little bit shafted in the settlement. But when you're one guy, and you know, you're maybe your entertainment lawyer or whatever, going up against Sony and their lawyers,
and they don't play nice.
No, they don't play nice. They're a big company. You don't get to be a big company by having nice lawyers.
No.
It
is a matter that was settled very recently, again, middle of the month. According to the settlement, Mr. Jerry Lambert has acknowledged, or will have acknowledged, that his contract with Sony precluded him from promoting or endorsing competing game systems, and that he's also acknowledged that at the very least, confusion was created in the minds of some consumers who believe he was portraying the Kevin Butler character in both the PlayStation and Bridgestone commercials. This report coming by way of Steve McClellan of MediaPost.com.
Yes, and unfortunately, I guess under the terms of the settlement he reached with Sony, Lambert agreed not to appear in any ad or promotion that features or even mentions, quote-unquote, any other video game or computer entertainment system or video game company for a period of 2 years.
Now, it's not just as though he's put on that probation for 2 years. Once that period of 2 years are up, the Kevin Butler character will understandably remain the property of Sony. Lambert is barred from playing the character without Sony's permission. Now, for the first 2 years that he's eligible to do video games again, video game commercials again, so in 2 years' time, Lambert will have to basically give Sony notice and sufficient details about the commercial, what it entails, all that's involved, and his role in it, and get their permission to do the commercial.
Yes, because, you know, they're afraid, just to see if his character might come too close to the Kevin Butler character.
Yes.
Which, unfortunately, I think, because of the type of actor he is, they're always going to say, yeah, that's too close to Kevin Butler. Because I think Kevin Butler was just him just kind of amping up his own personality just a little bit.
Yeah, pretty much.
At least I get that impression when I see the guy. So, I don't see clear weather in the next 3 or 4 years for Mr. Kevin Lambert, unfortunately.
Jerry Lambert.
Yes, Jerry Lambert. Sorry, Kevin Butler.
It's easy to confuse the two, yes, because he is so synonymous with that role, so it is understandable. It is unfortunate. I would imagine, without knowing the full details of his contract or his arrangement with Sony, that he is, in fact, or would be, under some sort of salary-type structure where he's paid regardless of if he's doing commercials or not. I would hope for him and his sake that he is. Otherwise, this arrangement, this agreement, this needing to seek Sony's permission for pretty much any, well, video game company-related commercial you do could be a problem. Now, there's no word if this needing to seek permission extends to commercials beyond video game companies. If he wants to do a paper towel ad, will he need to get their permission as well?
Yes, because what if he's, you know, promoting Brawny or like anything like that in a similar way to how Kevin Butler was promoting Sony stuff?
Now, I've read conflicting reports on the matter, so I'm not entirely clear yet on if that is the case, if he would need to seek Sony's permission for something like that. Like, what would he have to do as an actor to be different enough from Kevin Butler?
Yeah, I just...
Doting dad?
Yeah,
punk rock old man? What?
I think this is totally unfair, and I feel bad for him.
I feel bad for him, however, part of me thinks, too, it could have been worse. There could have been punitive damages that Sony would have demanded.
Yeah, they could have, you know, destroyed him as a human being who has money.
And quite possibly had him, well, wiped from all of human history.
Yes.
If they wanted to. I'm sure that's part and parcel of their legal team.
Yeah.
Or they have someone in there who could do that. So that's a thing. again, could have been worse. Could have been a lot worse. And it's also worth noting that the lawsuit between Sony and Bridgestone is still ongoing. They are still working that out. It is currently filed in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California. So, go team.
Yeah, the kinks were not worked out of that one yet.
No, something tells me Sony will want and is seeking a bit more than just an apology and an acknowledgement that confusion might have been created.
Yeah.
In which case, they probably want some money.
Yes, some serious cashola, I think is the technical term for it.
They's be demanding the scratch, yo.
Yes.
I'm sure
cheddar.
That's... Yes, that is no doubt the legal speak as put forward by their lawyers.
Yes.
Let me pull out this weighty tome of legal definitions. Yes. Cheddar.
The legalese to English dictionary.
Yes.
Cheddar. Dollar bill, you know, various. There's various terms under money, you know, in the legalese to English dictionary.
Indeed. Many more. We could spend an entire program simply going through the legalese to English dictionary, but we're not that hard up for content yet. So maybe down the line when we've really jumped the shark, we'll do that, but not yet. We have other news to get to, and we will deal with a company, talk about a company that is very recent news regarding them that involves no lawsuits. No actors being sued, no bones growing in faces. In fact, it's some positive news coming out of Nintendo, who just a few days ago, actually just the day of this recording on Wednesday, January 23rd, they released another of their Nintendo Direct videos, this time focusing on the Wii U and some news, some announcements regarding that system, which for the month of January and February is in a bit of a release lull. There's really nothing new hitting the shelves for the Wii U. Nintendo, and actually even in their direct video, apologizing for the lack of releases. Okay, if you know it's a problem, why is it even happening?
Just do something about it.
Though Satoru Iwata in the video did say that they were focusing on quality rather than quantity, so, but they're saying after, you know, once we hit March on, it should be okay. We should be in the clear. There's just this one rough patch where I guess it was the holiday hangover. I don't really know how they quantify it, but
yes.
Nevertheless, did announce that in the spring and summer, some details, that the Wii U is going to get some software updates that will increase the, will improve the overall speed and the speed of the system, allowing games to launch faster, play faster, make the menus load quicker, so do be on the lookout for that. Apparently, Satoru Iwata even acknowledged that, yes, they've heard the cries from system users that the system is slow, and they don't like it, and so Nintendo is working on that. Further, in the springtime, the Wii U will be getting its own virtual console via a software update, which will initially bring NES and Super Nintendo games at launch, with Game Boy Advance titles added at a quote-unquote later date.
Though part of it sort of rubs me the wrong way. They released a little bit of information about what they're calling quote-unquote special pricing options for those who already bought the Virtual Console versions for the original Wii. If you already bought a game on the Virtual Console, no, your license is not transferable from the Wii to the Wii U. Though, you know, if you do want to spend an extra dollar, like if you want to spend $1 on an NES game or $1.50 for an SNES game, they'll be glad to take your money again.
Yeah, the way that works is you're paying basically to download again. Yes, if you're doing a straight transfer of your Wii system saves, game saves, and whatever you've downloaded from the Wii to your Wii U, they exist in a specific emulated area of the Wii U.
Yes, and I'm told it's a big pain to. Yeah, it's pretty much a big first world problem pain, but it's still a pain where you have to load up the Wii section just to be able to load up, you know, your Super Nintendo games or Genesis games or whatever games that you bought through the Virtual Console. You can't just access them from the Wii U menu proper. So this is kind of their, like,
I mean, you aren't forced to pay that dollar again. I mean, if you want, and if you're fine with it, you can still play the previous Virtual Console games you've downloaded and paid for in the Wii emulated area of the Wii U.
But I'm told, like, it's just,
It sucks. Fair enough. But if you're wanting to download a game from the Virtual Console outside of that area and have it exist in the normal Wii U sphere in a non-emulated area of the system, it's going to cost you, again, $1 for NES games, $1.50 for Super Nintendo games.
Of course, that's for games, again, you've already bought through the Virtual Console. The standard prices would apply otherwise.
So decide what's it worth to you.
Yeah.
Still play in the emulated area, or screw it, I can't handle this, I'll pay the dollar. Whatever.
Yeah.
They will also have, on some select Nintendo titles, NES titles, rather, special pricing to commemorate the 30th anniversary of the Nintendo Entertainment System, with games going for 30 cents, a commemorative 30 cents. Those titles to be released in the next couple months. I believe the first one is Balloon Fight, but don't quote me on that, but they will come in the months ahead for 30 cents. So,
and more stuff to make me feel super old.
there is that. Also announced, or they also announced that in the springtime as well, there will be an app that will be released for smartphones that will enable the Miiverse to be playable, be usable, be accessible from smartphone devices, as Nintendo promised at E3 of last year, and I believe the year before. So that finally will come to fruition. I guess they're finally making good on that. But the meat and potatoes of their Nintendo Direct conference on Wednesday, this past Wednesday, was games. Believe it or not, they've acknowledged that there needs to be software to drive hardware sales.
Yes.
That is an argument that you can make with every console and every machine out there. However, it seems doubly important with Nintendo, because so much of what drives the system are first-party titles, and people wanting a Nintendo machine to get the Mario games, the Zelda games, the whatever other games that you can only get on the Nintendo machine.
Indeed.
And so those, again, are the meat and potatoes, and a number of game announcements they released, I guess, first and foremost, they acknowledge that there is, in fact, a brand new ground-up Legend of Zelda title in the works.
Yes, which has me and, well, anyone else who considers himself a fan of The Legend of Zelda excited.
In the video, series producer, I always screw this name, Eiji Onuma, I hope that's right.
Yes.
It's probably not. I apologize again. He is quoted as saying that the new Zelda game will, quote, rethink the conventions of Zelda, and says it will be a back-to-basics game, though further information, again, not shared. They're going to save that one for later on, possibly at E3, though they did also mention in the video that this new one, they acknowledge, is going to take some time to do. So it's probably not this fall, maybe not even next fall.
Yes, but to tide you over for Zelda stuff, they also announced that they're going to be releasing a HD remake of, well, a game that really got the short end of the stick when it came out.
I think it's, in the Zelda universe, it's regarded only slightly better than the CDI games.
Which is really unfortunate, because it's a really good game.
That is my sense of things, and a lot of people just rag on it because of the art style.
Yes, and to them I say, in your face, because Nintendo likes it enough to bring it back in HD, and that game, of course, that we're talking about is Wind Waker.
Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, the GameCube exclusive title. One of the reasons I bought a GameCube back in the day, nigh on 10 years ago, was for the art style. I loved it. I drink it up.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. I think it fit the Zelda universe perfectly, and yeah, I didn't understand when people were complaining, saying it looked too cartoony, because I kept saying, look back at like Link to the Past on Super Nintendo. It looked pretty much the same, if not more cartoony.
The vibrancy of the colors and just the vibrancy of the life, especially on Windfall Island as you go around, everything's just rich with a lot of, you know, bright hues everywhere. That's what drew me in. I loved it. It felt like a storybook.
Yeah, and I mean, it reminded me very much of the, well, Super Nintendo Legend of Zelda, which many people also regard as one of the best, which I find insane that on the one hand, a game that was vibrant initially and colorful and all that other stuff and had a very cartoony vibe to it is considered one of the best, but then when they tried to do that again, and, you know, just two systems later, it's considered one of the worst. I mean, it's almost like these are, they also all seemed like people who didn't play the game were just ragging on it either.
People who probably dismissed it because they couldn't just get into the art style and they wanted something with more realistic graphics, better textures or whatever else, and not this kid stuff.
Yeah.
As in my experience, yeah, that's how people dismissed it. They missed out, their loss, but if they've come around, if they've matured their opinions whatsoever, then this fall they'll be able to get it on the Wii U in HD, redone with new HD graphics and gamepad functionality,
yes,
which is a good thing, and in the videos shown, the bright colors are even brighter. It's certainly more lush.
That's what HD does to things, my friend.
Wow, oh wow. I might have to get with this HD generation.
Yes, it's about time. But Zelda's not the only thing they talked about at this latest update. Oh, no, they kept going.
No, there was a number of big titles that they touched on. Please, continue on. Espouse some more.
Well, there's a new 3D Mario game coming out being developed by Nintendo EAD Tokyo, which is, FYI, the same team that developed Super Mario Galaxy and Super Mario 3D Land for the 3DS. This game will apparently be playable at E3 2012. Ooh. So if you have the good fortune of going to E3 2013. I don't know why I said that. No, still, not quite used to the 2013 thing yet.
Understandable.
But if you have the good fortune of going to E3 in 2013 this upcoming June, be on the lookout for that one.
And it certainly seems like Nintendo is putting a lot of heavyweight titles, or coming to E3 with a lot of heavyweight titles this year. I guess it makes sense. Their system is now out. They don't have to necessarily promote the system itself. They can actually get into the games of it, while their competitors, Sony and Microsoft, will be talking about hardware. They'll be able to talk about the experiences you'll be able to get with this, this system, which is out now. Makes sense. I guess it puts them in a bit of an advantageous position, but we shall see how it holds up.
But it also seems like, they're really not pulling any stops here. Like, there was another surprise, well, to me anyways, that they talked about here. They're coming up with a new game that centers around Yoshi.
This is true. This is my big takeaway from the Nintendo Direct video.
I mean, it's been 15 years since the last game that you could had Yoshi in it, if you don't count, you know, the cameos that he made in, you know, subsequent games since then. But it was just cameos, and it wasn't like an actual playable role.
Yeah, it wasn't a Yoshi-centric title.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not counting Mario Party or Wii Party or anything like that.
Or the Mario Kart games.
Or anything like that. No. I'm talking about, like, you know, like Yoshi's Story or Yoshi's Island, which, yeah, that, like, Yoshi's Story was the last one that came out for the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, and that was back in 1998.
Yes, that was 15 years ago.
Oh, God.
So,
let's stop throwing around these big numbers.
Yes. Yeah, so,
feeling old.
Yeah. I remember when that game was new. But
but it's that being said, we can look past that fact and be heartened and by the knowledge that there's a new Yoshi-centric game coming out. No firm title on it yet. However, it's not just the knowledge that there's a new Yoshi game coming out. It's being done by the team who worked on Kirby's Epic Yarn.
Yes, which was another kind of cool, unexpected game when it came out. I mean, I wasn't expecting a new Kirby game, and for it to come out with such an interesting art style.
Very unique art style, too. I haven't really seen anything replicating that, I guess, arts and crafts, patchwork, zippers, buttons motif since, but apparently some of that will make its way into the new Yoshi title. In the brief snippet of gameplay that was shown off, it plays as a 2D platformer.
Yes, but and the cool thing is that it's actually being directed by Takashi Tezuka, who, as you may or may not know, was the director of both Yoshi's Story and of Yoshi's Island.
Yoshi's Island being one of the hardest platforming Mario games I've ever encountered.
Yes, it was a very fun game.
It was, and it was hard.
If you haven't.
I have.
It's got a very good ending, and
There was a lot of profanity involved to get to that point for me.
Yes.
It's not easy.
No, it's not.
There are parts that just challenge you and are merciless.
But yes,
and
great game, one of my favorites.
Certainly fantastic game. In the brief snippet of gameplay that was shown off, I was going to say, not just is Yoshi the main character, is he platforming, running across the screen left to right in standard fashion, he's not just jumping up on Shy Guys, but he's also shown, and he's seen, comprised of yarn. And then he eats a Shy Guy, his egg forms around him, and then, boom, he's back to being the normal 3D Mario that we know and love. Or Yoshi.
Yes.
Excuse me, Yoshi. 3D Yoshi that we know and love. There we go. So hopefully it's a nice blending of, say, the Yoshi's Story world and the Kirby's Epic Yarn world, which, if you have a Wii or you have a Wii U and you haven't played it yet, get Kirby's Epic Yarn. I highly recommend it. I'm still working my way through it. I'm very slow at things. Cut me some slack, people. But that wasn't the... Those weren't the only games announced. Nintendo also went on to say that at E3 this year as well. They'll be showing off a new Mario Kart title to go along with the new 3D Mario game that they'll be showing off. And a number of other titles, actually, were announced as well. These ones a bit quicker. They, I guess, were more in the rapid-fire section of the Nintendo Direct Conference. But there's a new Wii Party entry coming this year to the system in the summertime. Nintendo and Atlus are working to collaborate on a title that will be a crossover of Fire Emblem and Shin Megami Tensei of those franchises. And as well, Monolith Soft, who worked on and did Xenoblade Chronicles for the Wii, one of the last three, I guess, RPGs for the Wii, is developing a new title, new unnamed title for this Wii U as well. And it's apparently going to be a Xenoblade title. The end image of the trailer for it is a big red X painted across the screen. I don't know what that could mean. Could be anything.
Yes.
Or could stand for Xenoblade.
Yeah, or Xeno something.
Xenogears, I believe there was.
Yeah, the Xenogears, Xenosaga, Xenoblade. I think they're all the same series, just developed by different people. I don't know. Something along those
lines.
Could
be wrong, could be confused things.
Xeno something, probably.
Indeed. But Nintendo also did make mention of the fact that Super Smash Bros., the game that that is being developed by Namco Bandai, in a surprise announcement from last year, will be shown, but not playable at E3, with the first images of it being ready and put on display at the Summertime News Extravaganza.
Yes, you can't have a new Nintendo system and not have a new Super Smash Bros. Game for it. That's just one of those things that doesn't happen now.
It goes hand in hand. It really does. But we spoke of a crossover that Nintendo announced in their Fire Emblem Crossing with Shin Megami Tensei. And I think we should talk about a crossover that could count as the craziest crossover that we heard of in all of 2012. It was a project called Project Cross Zone, or Project X Zone, if you wish to pronounce it as it is written.
Yes, and when we originally talked about it on this show, we spoke about it in, you know, an excited fashion, but in a fashion where we thought it's too crazy to come to North America.
Almost a defeated, excited fashion. It's like, this is crazy, but it just seemed, the concept of it seemed so Japanese.
Yes, where it doesn't seem like it could possibly exist outside of Japan, but
As a refresher, for those of you who might not be up with Project Crosszone, it is a strategy RPG that is a collaboration project done between three companies. Three. You don't see that done, if ever. Look at the amount of effort and work that goes into making Street Fighter Cross Tekken or anything else.
Yeah.
That's a big, huge effort. And that's just two companies.
Yes.
Now you have three. It is Namco Bandai, Sega, and Capcom. Behind this project, it is, of all things, a 3DS game.
Yes, a strategy RPG. Let's just put that out there one more time, as a reminder. And it features characters from, various worlds of various games produced by those three companies.
29 different game franchises in all are represented in Project Crosszone.
Yes.
29 different franchises.
Everything from Darkstalkers and Valkyria Chronicles to Street Fighter to Tekken, Mega Man, Resident Evil. Pretty much anything you can imagine by those three companies will have some sort of representation in there in a strategy RPG.
Yes, in which you control two characters. It's the buddy system. Two characters from each of the, 29 franchises in the game. And they, apparently, the story of it is there's some rift in the space-time continuum and all these universes are blending together and blah, 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 blah. Doesn't matter, because you have these 29 franchises coming together, which I'm sure the licensing departments from each of these companies had a field day with the paperwork.
Oh, probably.
Forests were just leveled in order to make this all work and come together. I'm sure of it. But the fact is, it works and was released in Japan. And again, this doesn't seem like something that would ever come to North America. It shouldn't. This has no business coming to North America. It screams Japanese exclusive.
Yes. Well, we were wrong.
Were we ever?
And, probably for the better that we're wrong, because it's always awesome when, you know, weird just wacky Japanese things come to North America in what looks like it'll probably be an almost unaltered state, with the exception of it being translated. You know, that's what brought us Katamari Damacy.
Indeed.
Which was a surprise hit.
It certainly was.
It became like, you know, basically like a cult smash over here, and, you know, there's tons of people that love Katamari, but it's very Japanese, like incredibly Japanese.
Oh, certainly.
And I have a feeling that this one has the same kind of potential.
I could see this doing quite well. I certainly agree with you. Now, it is coming over, as you mentioned, almost unaltered, but you would have to think with a game like this, I mean, it's so, you know, it was made in Japan. All right, they're probably just going to translate it and redo some of the voiceover work in the game and whatever else. Well, apparently not. See, that's where you'd be wrong, because according to Destructoid, there's no English voiceover whatsoever. No. You're getting the straight-up Japanese voices.
No, like, it's totally unaltered. They're just changing, you know, changing the Japanese text and adding English subtitles to things.
Yes.
Like, doing as little work as possible, just like Katamari.
I would have thought at least, like, redo the voiceovers.
No? Well, who are they going to get? No-name actors?
Well, with some of these franchises, though, they already do have voice actors for the people. Certainly, you know, some of the Tekken characters and
I guess that's true.
Resident Evil characters. But, however, there are some other franchises covered in this game that I don't think have ever seen North American shores. And probably for that reason, amongst others, such as Dear God, that would require quite a bit of effort and work and coordination and logistics, so let's not.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that just kind of adds, I don't want to say to the credibility, but the weird, bizarre appeal of this game that just keeps it so Japanese-centric.
Yeah.
That you're playing something that is just so... That just makes it crazier to me.
Yes.
Just like Katamari Damacy. It always comes back to Katamari Damacy, doesn't it?
I think it does, in terms of just, you know, benchmark and how Japanese something is, you know, with relation to how well it did in North America. So, yeah.
A fine point. No, yeah. No, I see it, and point well taken.
And hey, for Katamari, all of the sequels to Katamari got released here as well.
That is true, too.
And they all do well anytime they're released.
And did have a fairly fruitful, I guess, span of time on North American shelves. So, yeah, I see your point. Fair enough, then. Well, no firm release date yet for Project Crosszone, when it will come out to North American 3DS units. The only release window given is that it's coming out this summer.
Yeah.
June, July, August, maybe May if you want to be a bit early, possibly September if it's running a bit behind. And it's not just coming to North America. They're releasing it worldwide, too. It's getting a launch in Europe and Australia as well. So, I guess all three companies, and technically four companies, because this is a Nintendo platform they're doing it for, so I'm sure Nintendo has some say in this, that they all decided, hell, why not? Let's just throw it out there and see what happens.
Yeah, pretty much.
Fair enough. All right, can't blame them. Sometimes the best ideas are ones you just throw out there and see what happens.
Yeah.
Good enough. And let them, you know, sink or swim, fight or flight, flounder, opposite of flounder.
Yes.
Which is a word that doesn't come to me at the moment.
Yeah. Flounder, swim, perhaps?
There's that, but meh. I already use sink or swim. I can't use swim twice.
Fair enough. Sail? Sink or sail? Sail or flounder?
Doesn't have that same ring to it.
Fly or flounder?
You're getting a bit more illiterate. You know what? That is our homework for next week.
Yes. So what you need to do is figure out a decent opposite word for flounder and send us an email containing that word to the arcade... Or sorry, info@thearcadeshow.com.
Indeed. No need to get heavy yourself. Yes, indeed. So that is your homework. Help us. And remember, it has to be alliterative.
Yes.
That is the way these things work best.
Yes. I mean, so an F word, not the F word, but, you know, an F word like flounder, that means the opposite thing as flounder.
Exactly. It's got to have a nice ring to it, so send us your best idea. Again, info@thearcadeshow.com. Well, we've talked for quite a bit of time already, not as long as our two supersized year-in-review editions, and we're going to try and maybe not go as long in future for no business-as-usual programs, because those were special exemptions. We'll try and get out of here in a decent amount of time, but we do have one last item to get to, that is the item we always get to before we head out. That is the blast from the past.
Yeah, something that's collecting dust on your shelf, or perhaps collecting dust on your parents' shelf, and you've never seen it before, or never heard of it, or never played it, or never listened to it, or something. It's basically some form of media that we're telling you to listen to, or
to enjoy.
To enjoy in some sort of way. And it's old.
Yes.
It's not new.
You've probably forgotten about it.
Yes. This one, if you've forgotten about it or never heard about it, it's a real shame.
Crying shame. You are being deprived.
Yes, but this little number this week came out in 1988. It's a movie, and it's a badass movie.
It was a summer smash. It really was, I guess, in the heyday of 80s summer blockbuster big action movies.
Yes, this is when Bruce Willis got added to the roster of big 80s action guys.
That's right,
I think this is really like the one that kind of shoehorned him in there with Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Van Damme and Seagal and all of them.
Yep.
This one, the legendary Die Hard.
The first one, the one that started it all, again, circa July 1988, where he plays New York police officer John McClane, who goes to meet up with his, estranged wife.
Yes, not divorced, but estranged.
Indeed, they're separated. She's taking a job in California. And
he's a New York cop.
He's New York through and through. he doesn't do well with planes or technology or anything. He's very much a street cop from New York. And terrorists take over the Nakatomi building and hold it hostage because they want to get to what's inside the vault.
Yes, which is hundreds of millions of dollars of bearer bonds.
You would think gold or diamonds.
Yeah, no bearer bonds. Just whatever it is. But the best part is that Alan Rickman plays Hans Gruber, the bad guy in the movie.
Yes, he is a good bad guy.
Yes. Few actors play as menacing as a bad guy as Alan Rickman, even though he's still very British no matter what he does. He was supposedly playing a German. It didn't really matter.
No. Now, what I love about this movie is that it came out in July, but in the movie it's set at Christmas time because, again, it's taking place at the office Christmas party, and everyone is held hostage at that point. I believe this movie works best as a Christmas classic movie now.
Yes, I agree.
I like to think and try and fit it into my Christmas viewing season as being viewed as part of the Three Wise Men amongst a Stallone and Schwarzenegger movie as well.
Yes.
Bruce Willis has to be a part of that trifecta, Holy Trinity, as it so was, and some of the biggest explosions you've seen in a movie to that point, and really since.
Yeah, I think so.
There are only a few movies, a handful of movies that maybe have done bigger explosions, exploding set pieces, than Die Hard. Probably, Ghostbusters 1 off the top of my head. But
Terminator 2 and True Lies, for sure.
True. But this is up there in the top five,
yeah,
I'd say.
Oh, for sure. This is definitely one of the big explosion movies.
And if you didn't have a chance to watch it as part of your Christmas viewing season, that is all right. It is a great movie to be watched any time of year, be it spring, summer, winter, or fall. You can watch it in those seasons all.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Die Hard from July 1988 with Bruce Willis, where he plays badass cop John McClane. New Die Hard entry coming out in February, March, I believe it is. He teams with his son. And really the core mechanic of Die Hard that makes it so great is it's John McClane by himself against ridiculous insurmountable odds.
Yes.
But he does it. And so later ones, they add in someone else, a partner, whatever else. He loses something. They're enjoyable. But Die Hard, where it's just him by himself, that's what you want. That's where it's at. Watch it. Love it. Report back to us. Email us info@thearcadeshow.com or drop us a line straight up on our website, thearcadeshow.com. That is all for this week's edition of the Arcade, everybody. So glad you could join us, and we hope you tune in next week when we are back with you again. Business as usual is the name of the game here on the Arcade. All that fancy stuff from the winter, December, January is gone, and we are just back to doing what we do, and that's kicking ass and taking names.
Indeed.
And we will do that again next week. So until then, everybody, good night.
Good night.